Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report underway. IU gets a win last night, 2-0 in Big Ten play as they win at State College, Pennsylvania in a game over Penn State. It wasn't pretty always, but IU finished the game strong. There were some shaky moments there at the end as well, but a pretty strong finish for the team as they get to 2-0 in Big Ten play. That's the big thing. You don't look back and remember every portion of every game. There are some highlights that stand out. I'm sure there are some dumb plays that we'll all remember and can recall from past seasons as well. But most importantly for IU, 2-0 in what we think and feel will be a very tough and competitive Big Ten conference this season, maybe even more so than initially thought, and knocking off two early victories before you get back to conference play in early January. Really big stuff for this IU team, especially to go on the road. Penn State, a tough place to play. A lot of Big Ten venues, very tough places to play with road differences in the gyms and crowds and talent on some of the teams. Anytime you can go on the road in college basketball and get a win, obviously that is big stuff. Indiana gets their first road win of the season as well after losing by 1 point at Arkansas, getting blasted at Duke, and coming back for the victory at Penn State yesterday. Welcome into the show. We do this each day, 11 a.m., complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. Catch the replay at 3 if you missed the live show. We're also on podcast as well, a SoundCloud app and the Apple Podcast app as well. Two very easy ways to connect with our program each day. Let's take a look at our guest lineup today. It's presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, as usual, we'll have our Hoosier headlines, our news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Today, we'll recap some highlights from last night's game. We'll take a look at another draft board, which has Romeo a little higher than the board we mentioned yesterday. We'll also talk some about the New Albany Floyd Central game that's coming up this weekend. And there were a couple high school games last night. We'll recap those for you briefly and tell you about some of those top performers as well. In segment two, Ken Bykoff is filling in today for Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. Ken and I will break down the IU win at Penn State last night. Jawan Morgan back playing, looked fairly healthy, was able to go pretty strong, pretty hard. He big part of the victory last night for IU, and a big part of just seeing him back out there in the leadership and the things that he brings to the team. No question about it, if there's a lack of having him, if he had to miss the game or was going to be out for a while because of the injury, whatever it was that was bothering him in the game against Northwestern over the weekend, that his presence, I guess is what I'm trying to say, his presence or lack thereof can be a big deal for this Indiana team either way. So he's back or appeared healthy, was able to contribute. Romeo Langford, a good game. Some other things like Robert Fennessy closing the game very strong offensively, helped Indiana bring home the victory on the road last night. We'll recap all areas of that game last night with Ken when he joins us later in the program. Then segment three, Brian Sullivan is going to join us. Brian is the general manager of WNAS radio and television at New Albany High School, and he also has kind of been in the background a lot of some of our shows. He's been on before, but kind of as a historian of basketball in the area, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the Silver Anniversary members that have been selected for that team by the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame today, and I might even pick Brian's brain a little bit for some history on the New Albany Floyd Central series as that rivalry comes forth on Friday evening at the Doghouse in New Albany. So Brian Sullivan with us later in the program. Look forward to talking with him. That's a lineup presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll receive $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Obviously, last night, Indiana getting the win at Penn State on the road for a number of reasons is big stuff. And I think you've got to look at Romeo Langford, the way he played in the first half. He was in one of those Romeo grooves. He had a series of baskets back-to-back, some great plays that you could just tell are next-level type plays when you watch him play. And then again, a close from Fennessy, Robert Fennessy, down the stretch, he did big things for Indiana with the basketball, scoring at some, directing the offense at other times. But he really, in the close of the game, was the key for Indiana. It was Romeo in the first half with 15 points to lead all scorers at that point, and then Rob Fennessy in the close of the game. Two big standout players, I felt like, last night for Indiana. And also, the defense of IU looked a lot better. Still not great, still not perfect, but I don't think anyone expects it to be at this part of the season. But definitely some improvements defensively for this IU team in the game last night at Penn State. And Penn State, a 9-0 lead. When I first flipped the game on, getting back in from some other stuff, IU down 9-0 on the road. That is never a good sign in Big Ten Conference play, especially for a road game. Penn State, I think, was 1 of 11, 1 of 12 at the free throw line. That is not good, and that is a big reason I think Indiana was able to not only get back in the game early on, but go on to win the game as well. Indiana has had their own struggles shooting free throws. Romeo has had struggles as well at the free throw line, but obviously Penn State, some work to do there. Indiana wins it on the road, 2-0 in Big Ten Conference play. I can't say that enough. That is very important to say. It's December 5th. And Indiana has two Big Ten games under its belt, which is odd enough as it may seem, with normally the conference not starting until January, except for last season. But both of those games have been victories, one at home, one on the road, neither against teams that are considered to be in the upper echelon, I think, of Big Ten Conference teams. But Penn State was coming off of a nice ACC Big Ten Challenge win over Virginia Tech, a ranked team just a few, well, I guess, within the last week, week and a half or so. For Indiana to be 2-0 and overall to have lost two games and be 7-2 on the season, I think it's a pretty respectable mark. It's a pretty good point for this team as they jump back into non-conference play. And, of course, everybody is excited about the Louisville game at Assembly Hall. Louisville playing some good basketball. That win over Penn State last week in the ACC Big Ten event, I think, showed that they are making some big strides under first-year coach Chris Mack. And I think that they will challenge Indiana at Assembly Hall. I'm glad that is a home game. I think IU fans should be glad it is a home game and not being played at a neutral site or not being played definitely at the Yum Center in Louisville. But I think it'll be a good one on Saturday when IU and Louisville hook up in a kind of a renewal of a natural rivalry that exists. Also, Romeo Langford, after his good performance last night, saw another draft board out earlier today. This one was by Sports Illustrated. It's their second update to their draft board in this early part of the college basketball non-conference season. Zion Williamson, no surprise, is number one on their board. Also, number five, Romeo Langford. So we saw yesterday Jeff Goodman had listed him at the number 10 spot. He's number five, according to the latest update from the Sports Illustrated board, and that's going to continue as players have good seasons, bad seasons, a good stretch, a bad stretch, whatever it may be. The draft board will fluctuate a lot. Again, let me say this for everybody that asked me and everybody that wants to know about Romeo Langford's NBA prospects for this upcoming draft, hard to see him not going, but most importantly, there'll be a number, a key small number of these draft boards and certain people to pay attention to that do these draft boards once the season has ended and the chatter that they're able to pick up from NBA personnel and what they're saying about where people could go. They, I don't want to say at all, get it accurate. There's always some major surprises. There's always a lot of little surprises, but that will give you a much better read later into the year before the month of June where Romeo will go. These are going to fluctuate a lot right now. Some guys that are maybe way down will move way up. A couple that are up may move down based on what's said, what's seen over the next few months. But for now, Romeo has been anywhere from 5 to 10. I think 5 is the highest that I've seen him. He's actually bumped up 3 spots in the Sports Illustrated ranking. He was 8th last time when they released their initial draft board for the 2019 draft. But it's interesting because as IU has a season going on, and it's a big one, and as IU is entering some of its big non-conference games to close out that part of the season and then, of course, get back into conference play, you've got this sidebar story that is Romeo Langford, and everybody wants to know, especially after he has a good game or a big game, what is he looking like for the future? Is there a chance he returns for 2 years at Indiana? Where will he go in the NBA draft if he leaves now? So it's kind of an interesting thing that hasn't always been in the discussion with IU basketball. Sure, they've had players leave early before, but normally not a one-and-done situation, something you're used to in Bloomington, but it looks like that's the path that we're definitely heading down this year with Romeo Langford. Moving on to our next headline, Floyd Central at New Albany on Friday night. Got a lot of people asking about tickets. Will it sell out? Is there a way to buy tickets in advance? I need to check with the athletic directors and find out those details. I haven't seen anything printed or received anything at this point, but I do expect the crowd to be tremendous. To be quite honest, I would be disappointed if the game doesn't reach a sellout capacity. New Albany fans have a lot of excitement about this team. It's a home game. It's a rivalry game, and I think Floyd Central should expect a big turnout. There have been times where rival teams like Floyd and Jeffersonville, when they had to come to New Albany, couldn't get the number of tickets they wanted to support and see their team because of all the season ticket holders and all the mania that surrounded the Romeo Langford deal. Floyd has a really good team this year. They've proven that multiple times this season. They've went on the road. They've beat some big teams. They've overcome some teams that have good individual players as well. So I would sure expect Floyd Central fans to be very excited about this game this weekend as they will come in, and I think a big challenge for New Albany. So should be a good one. Friday night at the Doghouse, really the kickoff to me of high school basketball. We've had some good games so far. We've learned a lot about local teams. We've had some big players step up from some of our area schools. But this weekend, it's always, to me, the really kickoff, the big weekend for high school basketball, the first big one with New Albany and Floyd Central playing on Friday night. There are some other good games on Friday night as well. And then on Saturday, from a statewide perspective, and of course the last couple of years, New Albany's been in it. This year, Jeffersonville plays Carmel in it, but the Forum Tip-Off Classic at Southport, it's just a tremendous collection of high school basketball teams and talent from the state of Indiana. The nightcap of that is Center Grove with Trace Jackson Davis against LaPorte La Lemire and Keon Brooks and some other talented players on the La Lemire roster as well. But a huge weekend. Lots of opportunities to get out and see some good games. Of course, IU and Louisville on Saturday, but maybe you can find a way to hit the Southport deal, see a lot of good games, see a lot of IU recruits and potential recruits in the future as well. Also find a way to work in that IU Louisville contest too, but a big weekend in high school basketball. And I always throw this out there on Monday or Tuesday of the week of some of these rivalry games, on Twitter. Got a decent following, like to see what high school and local fans, local sports fans think about the New Albany Floyd Central game and other rivalries as well. And right now, and I just put this out later in the evening last night, there have been 514 votes, and with that many votes cast, 51% think New Albany will win the game on Friday. 49% think Floyd Central will win the contest as well. You can vote if you follow me on Twitter, at Hoosier Hills, and we'll keep you updated on this poll throughout the week. But I think the public perception is about what a lot of us think, that it should be a really competitive game when the two rivals hook up. And even though Floyd coming in with some big wins so far this season, the game's at New Albany, and a lot of talent there back for the Dogs as they try to figure things out without Romeo Langford. So excited about that one Friday. I just hope that fans of both schools and even fans from the area that maybe enjoyed that game and others last year primarily because of Romeo and some of the talent involved will come back because it was such a good environment. And I think it'll be a competitive game one way or the other, no matter who comes out on top in Friday night's game. Should be fun. Also last night, a couple high school basketball games. Providence under Sean Smith, they improved to 2-0. They beat Meade County on the road last night. Austin Grants had 15 points to lead the Pioneers. Nick Sexton and Hayden Burke with 12 points apiece. And a big win because I don't think Meade County is its typical self. They're 0-3 now after the loss last night. But I've always been told by Providence coaches over the years, Coach LaFay, Coach Grants, and others, that it's a tough place to play, and it's always a weeknight game. So a big win for Providence as they improved to 2-0 on the weekend. Also last night, Charlestown was a winner, 57-49 over Henryville. Charlestown was led by Cortland Black. He had 15 points. Matt Perella with 12 points as well. And Henryville in the loss, of course, they lost a ton of talent from last year. They were led by Cade Badger, who's been putting up really big numbers. He had 28 points last night for Henryville. That's a look at the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill with fresh made-to-order food, a great selection of craft brews, and the best sports atmosphere around. Hoopsters has karaoke and a DJ on Friday nights and a live band on Saturday nights as well. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll be right back with more. You're listening to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
A wild start and a wild finish last night, but Indiana gets it done on the road 64-62 as they improve to 2-0 in Big Ten play. And, of course, the Louisville game coming up this weekend, that'll be followed by a game against Butler at a neutral site. So some interesting non-conference games forthcoming before Indiana gets back to Big Ten play at the first of the year. Joined by Ken Bykoff of Pigs.com to recap everything last night. Maybe take a look ahead at the UofL game as well coming up this weekend. Ken, a road win is a good win in the Big Ten Conference, and Indiana got a big one last night at Penn State.
Yeah, they sure did, and that was an important win. Any road win is just absolutely huge in the Big Ten. That's kind of your formula for success is hold court at home, steal some on the road, and you're going to put yourself in a position to win a conference crown. When you play on the road, it's been this way for years. My thing has always been it's not how, it's how many. Just walk out with the win. However it goes, if you're able to blow a team out, if you have to rally, if you have to squeak by, if you have to hold on, it doesn't make a difference as long as you walk out with the W. And the Hoosiers did that, and that's really what they went there to do, is just get the win. Everything else is gingerbread as long as they're ahead on the scoreboard at the end.
Ken Bykoff, Pigs.com, with me talking about last night's win, a victory for Indiana at Penn State. Romeo Langford, again, want to start there. That's who the fans want to hear a lot about. He had a tremendous game. And, Ken, at one point in that first half, he had, I think, back-to-back baskets in a couple different sequences. I thought I was watching him play for New Albany again in high school, just completely took over the game for at least a segment there on his way to 15 first-half points to lead all scorers.
Yeah, he did a great job, and his step back jumper was working real well. And when you could see him getting more and more comfortable and setting guys up for that shot, and that to me is what is where you see his kind of development, to where obviously he was very comfortable in New Albany doing that kind of thing, and now here it is in an IU uniform. This is his ninth game of the regular season. He's starting to feel it a little bit. We're getting close to being a third of the way through the season, and you could just see him continuing to get more and more comfortable in his own skin at the college level, and he's starting to realize that the things that worked and some things that worked in high school will still work at the college level. Some of them won't, but certainly that step back jumper is something that he's developed really nicely, and you could just see that confidence growing. He knows that he belongs at this level. He knows he could play at this level, and I think that really showed through when the Hoosiers needed it the most.
Then Rob Finnessy, as much as Romeo helped in the first half and really throughout the game, he closed really strong. He had a great sequence there in the final minutes. Some big baskets, some drives to the basket, handling the ball with poise. And it's hard to remember at times that IU is doing so much of what they've done, and they've got a 7-2 record on the season with a lot of freshmen in the lineup for a lot of minutes in these games.
Well, not just freshmen, but sophomores, too. I mean, if you look at that starting lineup that Indiana trotted out there, you know, you had two freshmen, two sophomores, and a senior. You know, and that's what they went with. And that's kind of been their rotation. And, you know, a guy like Al Durham is also a sophomore, and he continues to look more and more comfortable. But certainly, Finnessy's a guy. He's inconsistent, sometimes inside of games. But he's a freshman, and you're going to have that. And so you take the good with the bad with him, but his bad isn't that bad, and that's the positive. And then he was able to step up and just do a very nice job down the stretch. I think he had 10 of his 12 in the second half. He finishes with, you know, 12, 5, and 5. And no one's going to complain about that, in a first conference game on the road for a true freshman. I've really been impressed with him. And even more impressive was the fact that Indiana was able to limit some of these guys' minutes a little bit. Some of them they are forced to because of foul trouble, but you look at a guy like Finnessy, earlier this year he's played, you know, 36, 39 minutes. And for a guy who has played usually a maximum of 32 minutes at the high school level, the fact that he was limited to 29 minutes last night, I think, is good for him long term. And that's, to me, has always been the concern with these injuries. Yeah, the results are a concern, but the minutes that you're putting on young bodies who are going through a season for the first time have to be a consideration as well. And Indiana was able to do this and get something out of Finnessy, because I feel he was a little bit fresher later in the game because he didn't have to play quite as many minutes as he has at other times this season.
Ken Bykoff, Pigs.com, is with us. Ken is also the host of the Pigs podcast, which you can find at Pigs.com. He does those after all the IU games. Great content, audio content. If you're a fan of IU, you can find there as well. Ken, Archie Miller has been clear, I think, in his comments and the way that he's went about with his coaching, that defense matters, and he wants it to matter and be a real cog of his teams, not just this year or last year, but moving forward with how he's trying to build this IU program. How do you rate the defense this year, and maybe how do you compare it to the team a year ago at this point of the season and the progress that they're making?
Well, it's night and day over where this team was at this point in the season last year, because that was an absolutely terrible defensive team. And by the end of the year, they became a good to very good defensive team. This year, it's kind of they're inconsistent, but you could see that the tools are there with all these young guys playing. You could see that the tools are there for them to be a solid defensive team come the end of the year. The key to me is just, again, consistency, and it's consistency of effort. It's consistency of staying focused inside of games and bringing the same effort on both ends of the floor every possession. A lot of young guys playing. You don't see that inconsistency from a guy like Juwan Morgan, a guy like Zach McRoberts. You do see it from Finnessy, especially from Romeo Langford on the defensive end. There are times when Romeo is really just kind of playing matador defense. But then you have a situation like Indiana against Northwestern late when Juwan Morgan went out with his leg got banged up. All of a sudden you could see Romeo take it up a notch. And I think that just finding that consistency of effort is going to be key. Indiana has the length. They have the athleticism. Everything that they need to be a very good defensive team. It's just you need that consistency of effort and making sure everybody is mentally focused on what they're supposed to do.
Talking with Ken Bykoff of Pigs.com, we're recapping last night's 64-62 win for the Hoosiers on the road at Penn State. I've seen people say this, and I think I made the comment as well a couple times, but the two early Big Ten games for IU fans, I'm sure the coaches would agree with this, thank God it was Penn State and Northwestern. Not that there's anything wrong with wins over Penn State and Northwestern, two quality teams, two Big Ten teams. They count toward the record. But I'm looking at some of these other Big Ten matchups, these early games in the conference schedule, and would much rather see the Hoosiers get the chance to play and figure things out early against the Northwestern and a Penn State as opposed to maybe a Wisconsin or a Michigan or even a rival like Purdue.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier to kind of ease into the schedule because, I mean, it's not like Penn State and Northwestern are bottom feeders in any way, shape, or form. They're not cupcakes, but they're also not the top of the league either. And I think that that is you're exactly right. Just the fact that Indiana is able to ease into conference play, pull out a couple of tight wins while they're still figuring out, while they're still playing December basketball instead of, you know, what they might be in February, is important. And so that certainly helps. And that certainly helps when it comes to, you know, not splitting them or to open the season. You get those two wins, you're in good shape, and you're able to go forward. I think that it was exactly what Indiana needed. I think it's good enough that they got the wins. They continue to see the flaws that they have. Nobody is kind of getting their head in the clouds with this. And now these next two couple of non-conference games against Louisville and Butler can serve as a little bit of a measuring stick and really help them kind of find consistency on the floor because they're playing teams that are at basically the same level. That Duke game was ugly, but Duke, I think, is just far and away better than where Indiana is as a program right now. Northwestern and Penn State are a little bit are kind of at that same type of level or in that same ballpark as Louisville, as Butler. They're going to be challenges. Louisville and Butler, I think, are better than certainly better than Penn State, a little bit better than Northwestern. So it's making it so that Indiana is kind of easing into some of the tougher part of their schedule before, after that Butler game, obviously, they get to feed on a couple of cupcakes before the new year starts. The way the schedule has broken down for Indiana, I think, has been a positive for the development of this team so far.
Talking with Ken Bykoff of Pigs.com, IU a winner last night, and we're recapping all the big moments here. Louisville this weekend, an interesting game. Louisville early on had plenty of struggles of its own under a first-year coach, kind of a change in direction in that program as well. But since then, they've regrouped nicely. They had that big signature win at the Yum Center over Michigan State in overtime. That was a big one, a big momentum game for this Louisville team, and now they'll come to IU over the weekend. It's one of those games where love to see the two teams play. It's a natural rivalry that makes a lot of sense, and, of course, down here in southern Indiana, by Louisville really gets IU fans and Louisville fans going and gives them a reason to maybe pay a little bit more attention to each other as well. But with that said, I think IU fans should be glad this is one of those rivalry games that's at home and not on the road or at a neutral site like we've seen in other matchups between IU and Louisville over the years, because this Louisville team is really coming on here at this part of the season.
Yeah, they're coming along, and you know they're playing better. They're not great defensively, and so that's something. They've been real inconsistent with their defensive effort, and that's something that the Hoosiers need to try to kind of take advantage of. And that includes just being sure that you take care of the ball. The unforced errors is what has really killed Indiana in a number of these games, to where guys are just losing the handle or a lazy pass or something like that. If you can just crisp that up a little bit, you're going to have a real shot to knock off Louisville. It's a team that has great balance. That means it's going to put pressure on Indiana defensively to guard all over the floor. You can't stop one guy and beat Louisville. And, you know, that to me is going to be key. And you just have to take advantage of playing at home, like you said, and hit your free throws. Again, that's what makes this such a nice test for Indiana, is that they're able to, you know, take a step up from where you were playing against Northwestern or Penn State, but it's not too drastic a step up where you're playing from behind. I think it's going to be an interesting matchup and certainly something that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Ken Bykoff, Pigs.com, my guest. Ken is filling in today for Jeff Rabjohns, our regular guest on Wednesdays in this segment. I got to talk a little recruiting with you as well while we have you. Obviously, Trace Jackson Davis now in the fold officially for Indiana, to the delight of IU fans. Everybody wants to know now that Trace Jackson Davis is committed and had already previously signed, which makes him officially a part of the IU 2019 class at this point. When is Keon Brooks going to make a decision? And he's made some comments. I think Jeff Rabjohns had a story with him as well on the Pig site recently, but some comments about Trace's signing and other comments that lead you to believe, and I think he's even said it himself, he's getting closer, he feels some clarity in the process, and a decision could come soon. And Ken, all signs, and there's always the opportunity to be shocked or disappointed, but all signs, especially after Trace Jackson Davis's signing and some of the recent comments from Keon Brooks, all signs point to him joining this 2019 class when he finally makes that decision. Any insight on when he might be ready to make a decision, and do you have any feel otherwise for the Brooks recruitment?
Well, he's going to be making a decision sooner rather than later. It's kind of the way that he's saying it now. I know that it's coming up, but yeah, it seems like it's Indiana sitting in a pretty good spot. I mean, those guys have been pretty open about playing together. Trace Jackson Davis has been very vocal about it. And, you know, it seems that there are a couple of guys that really look forward to playing together. When you have that, obviously it's something that that makes a difference. And you see how this team is, and you see guys that they're watching how they might fit with the other people on the roster. And I just really like the way that Brooks is going about this in terms of what it means for Indiana. They're very good. North Carolina and Kentucky are a couple of teams that are in the mix. They're going to have an opportunity to sway him, but right now I think Indiana looks pretty good. It does seem like it's something that's sooner rather than later. He was really pretty honest about how, you know, that decision has kind of not changed his timetable, but certainly seemed to solidify some things in his mind. The fact that decision went down makes me feel good about where Brooks might be in terms of thinking about Indiana. The question, of course, is when. I don't think it's going to be, you know, as soon as this weekend, but certainly it's something that is going to come sooner rather than later.
Mike Pegram and I talked some about this yesterday on the Tuesday show, and I want to get your opinion as well. But are you surprised in any way by, I think, how quickly IU staff led by Archie Miller has taken over in many regards the state of Indiana? It started with some of the other 2018 guys. That class ended with the big decision from Romeo Langford and now Armon Franklin, followed by Trace Jackson Davis, and a likely, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I feel like I can say a likely commitment forthcoming from Keon Brooks. Are you surprised in how quickly the tables have turned with in-state players from this staff? I mean, Indiana's seen some improvements on the court. They fell shy of the NCAA tournament last year in Archie's first year, but even though the improvements have been steady and nothing, like a quick, you know, shot to the Sweet 16 or at least making the tournament in year one, despite those no terrific gains on the court, are you surprised that the recruiting has went as well as it has and Indiana has been as dominant as it has in keeping the best players inside the state in Bloomington?
Now, you know, to me, it's just about relationships and the promise of what's to come. And, you know, at Purdue, you know, in the other Big Ten state school, people know what Matt Painter is going to bring. And they know what the program is, and that's a very solid program. Same thing at Notre Dame or Butler, some of the other in-state schools. But at Indiana, you could see the promise of where the program's going. You could look at the results last year and say, hey, that team really developed from November to February. They didn't get where they wanted to go, but you could really see the development. And now this year, the fact Romeo is willing to come here kind of makes it an attractive place. And look, these guys talk. They talk. They play each other on the AAU circuit. They text with one another. They know how life is in the different programs. And I think that certainly the information flowing out of the Indiana program, not just from the coaching staff, but from everybody involved, is a positive for the program and how everything is being done. It maybe wasn't that way before, so just through relationships and word of mouth, I think people are excited about the direction the program's going.
Let's close with this. What's your one big concern about this IU team moving forward into big games like Louisville and Butler coming up?
I don't know if it's one big concern. It's two. The overall concern is discipline. You know, the team could get undisciplined on defense. They can get undisciplined in terms of valuing the ball, undisciplined on shot selection a little bit. So the discipline of this team and playing as a unit as opposed to individuals on the floor, I think that to me is the biggest difference and the biggest concern going forward. The good news is that's something that can develop in season. It just remains to be seen if they actually do it.
Ken Bykoff, Pigs.com, host of the Pigs podcast as well. You can find all of it at the Pigs.com website. Ken, with us, filling in for Jeff Rabjohns. As always, Ken, thanks for the chat. Thanks for your time. And we'll catch up with you again very soon, I'm sure.
Happy to join you. Thanks.
All right, Ken Bykoff with us on this segment here on Wednesday, recapping IU-Penn State, talking a little IU-Louisville for Saturday as well. A lot of excitement about that game. That will be a fun game, I think a great game to take in, and a tough one for Indiana as well. Again, glad that is a home game at Assembly Hall for the Hoosiers. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with our final segment. Different guest today, Brian Sullivan. He's the general manager of WNAS Radio and Television at New Albany High School, but he's also kind of a historian, does a great job tracking a lot of things, and he's got a good memory as well of high school basketball in the area and at New Albany, and he's going to join us in the next segment. We're going to kind of talk about the Silver Anniversary team. I know there's a lot of excitement and appreciation that some local guys with Southern Indiana connections named to that team earlier this week when it came out from the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. And Brian doesn't know this, but it's New Albany Floyd Central week, so I am going to put him on the spot and try to talk a little history of that series as well, if he can help us with that. He's got some records and things of nature that we might find interesting on game week. Speaking of New Albany Floyd Central, don't forget that coaches Jim Shannon and Todd Sturgeon will be with us on Friday. Good sports, willing to come on the day of the game to help preview what should be a great game and a big rivalry in local high school basketball on Friday night. So both of those guys will be with us in our Friday program. Stay with us coming up here in just a few days for that. We'll head to a break. We'll come back with Brian Sullivan. We'll talk some history, some Silver Anniversary connections from Southern Indiana, and more coming up next on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
All right, we're back on the Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report. Glad you're with us. Don't forget, if you miss a show, miss a segment, you can find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Hoosier Report, or just search in the SoundCloud app. We're also available on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to keep up with the program each and every day, whether you listen live, you listen to the replay here on the Big X at 3 o'clock, or you need to listen to us on demand at your choice. You can do so all of those ways. Brian Sullivan is with me now. Brian is a recognizable guy. You may know him from different stops along the way. Former IU Southeast women's basketball coach. He's been in the small college game for a number of years previously. Now he's the general manager of WNAS Radio and Television at New Albany High School, and just a basketball guy through and through, always fun to talk with, and has done a great job kind of tracking and preserving some of the history of our game over the years, specifically here in the local area when it comes to some of the great basketball rivalries and basketball moments that our area has experienced. And so he's the perfect guy to come on today to talk about some of the Silver Anniversary team members, which is a huge honor bestowed every year by the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. Three key guys from our immediate area named to that team. Two Red Devils, Brian Hanley and Corey Norman. They were part of the 93 Jeffersonville State Championship team. And of course, Ladrell Whitehead from New Albany as well. Brian, that was early in my high school basketball days as a young kid getting out to see some of those great teams in the early to mid-90s. But those three guys are notable guys for the history, at least in the decade of the 90s, for what basketball meant to our area and why basketball was as good as what it was then.
You know, it's crazy to think Jeffersonville got two guys on the Silver Anniversary team last year with Sharon Wilkerson and B.J. Flynn, and get two more. And I think they're probably underrated at this point when you start talking about the Lawrence Norths and the Pikes and the Marions and some of the real recognizable names over the past 30 years or so. But, man, Jeffersonville going to back-to-back Final Fours, winning that state championship, and now they've got four guys in the Hall of Fame as a Silver Anniversary team. I just think they're someone that we kind of take for granted now about how great that team was back then.
you know, with all the excitement in the last few years with Romeo in New Albany, and people say, will we ever see a player of that magnitude with those talents and the way he handled himself come through our at least immediate area again? And the answer is, who knows? He's been termed a once-in-a-generational type player, and I agree with all that. We very well may not see another player, at least at his level, come through the area. There's great players each and every year. Will someone reach his stature by the time they graduate? I don't know. But that said, as much as we talk about that team and that experience with Romeo that we all got to go through as fans, as coaches, as media, whatever the case was here in the area, you look back to the 90s and all the trips that local teams made to the state finals, even back into the late 80s, that was a remarkable period in its own right. And you wonder, I've wondered before, will we ever have a period again where that many local teams win state championships or make runs deep into the tournament? I mean, Southern Indiana was just, they were finding a way to Indianapolis, it seemed like, every year there for a number of seasons.
It really was. I think there was a stretch of 9 times in 10 years that between Bedford, Floyd, New Albany, and Jeff, that we had a team up there 9 out of 10 years representing Southern Indiana in the state finals. And I think 1994, I mean, this group that was being honored was maybe, you know, I wasn't around for 1971 season, and people that were around in that era can talk about the Steve Greens and Mike Flynn and Jerry Hale up at Floyd Central, and that was a great collection of talent that came through then. But 1994, you know, Jeffersonville was ranked number one in the state about half the season. New Albany beat them and was ranked number one then for the second half of the season. But on top of that, you know, Madison went 21-3 that year, and the only games they lost were, you know, tight ball games to New Albany and Jeff. Corden was ranked in the top 10 of the state most of the year. Paoli, which has two guys on that team, was in the top 10. So that 1994 season was maybe one of the real high points. You were traditionally very strong in this area for basketball, and we're going through an uptick right now. But there were so many state championship caliber teams, and at that point, you know, a Paoli that's a 2A now or a Corden that's a 3A, they were still lumped in, and they were playing all these teams and very competitive with them. So, you know, there was a lot of questions about who was going to be able to come out that season, and you know, just great players all around, and New Albany fortunate enough to come out of that regional and go represent the southern part of the state at the Final Four that year.
A little basketball history today with Brian Sullivan. We're talking about the Silver Anniversary team that was released by the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, and just some general history about the area as far as basketball goes. Take us through the list of Silver Anniversary team members for this year. Obviously, Hanley, Norman, and Whitehead, the three most local guys. So feel free to expand on anything with those guys you want. But also some other names on the list that have some connection to this area that fans might be interested to kind of take a trip down memory lane about.
It was nice to see Corey Norman get on there. He was the one of all those guys that came in with probably the most advanced hype coming out of middle school. I think part of that had to do with, you know, his dad being the best player on a state championship team. He was just physically a man when he came in as a freshman, and so there was a lot of attention paid to Corey. But then, you know, when you're having to share the ball with a Brian Hanley, with a Sharon Wilkerson, with a B.J. Flynn, and even a year or two ahead of them, Mike Harris and Joe Estes were Division I players, I think sometimes Corey got lost in the shuffle a little bit, but he was consistently outstanding from the time that he came in all the way through. You know, he was a member of that nucleus, you know, from day one, really. And, you know, so Ladrell winds up being a Mr. Basketball candidate. Hanley winds up being a Mr. Basketball candidate. And Corey kind of got a little bit the short shrift as far as the attention here and didn't wind up making the All-Star team. And so to see him get this recognition now, I thought was really nice. You know, Brian Hanley, I said it when I saw that on Twitter last night, was maybe the toughest matchup problem that we've ever had around here offensively. And no disrespect to a Damon Bailey or a Romeo Langford, but Hanley was 6'3 and about 230 and just solid. You know, he ended up playing Division I football out at Kansas State. He played point guard his first 2 years for Jeffersonville, then switched to power forward. And that's just a combination that you never see. So if you put a big on Hanley, he's going to take you outside. He had really quick and nimble feet, and he turned himself into about a 40% three-point shooter. So you couldn't have a big guarding him out there. But if you stick a guard on him, he's outweighing them by 60, 70 pounds in the post. And he really, of all those guys, when he decided he was going to score, especially his junior and senior seasons, there really wasn't a way to defend him. And so you just hope maybe you can force him to give him up and settle for three-point shots, because if he put his head down and got to the basket, there really wasn't a way to defend him. So it was just a real interesting 1-2 punch with those guys for Jeffersonville over the years. And then, of course, Ladrell Whitehead, you know, I remember writing a column about him when he was in seventh grade and saying if the kid ever figured out how to shoot a shot outside of 5 feet, he was going to be special. And that was, you know, he was such a quick player, maybe as quick a player as we've ever had in this area, an explosive first step, great leaper. He could get to the basket and not have to ever worry about developing that shot. And then he kind of got exposed a little bit as a sophomore when he got thrown out there. And to his credit, I've never seen anybody from a sophomore to junior year that worked as hard or improved their overall game as much. And he came from being kind of an afterthought as a sophomore to being an 18, 20-point-a-game scorer as a junior, and legitimately forced himself into the Mr. Basketball conversation his senior year. I don't know if there's ever been a kid 5'10 or under that dominated in Southern Indiana, you know, maybe until Mekhi Larry over at Evansville Bossy this past year, but there was just very little that Ladrell couldn't do when he wanted to impose his will on the game.
Brian, other connections on that Silver Anniversary team? I know as I look down through the list, there's a lot of familiar names, and I think there's some that have some connection to the area or fans might recall from some of their standout performances over the years.
Yeah, Paoli fans will remember Scott Combs and Joe Sibbett there, and they were a great inside-outside combination. Sibbett, one of the best outside shooters I think has ever come through Southern Indiana. Combs is a move-in. I believe he was at Lebanon his freshman year, and then his dad took a job down here, and so they were paired up together. He was a 6'8", big, but he could step out and shoot. You know, and unfortunately for them, they run into Jeffersonville, I think, at the semi-state 1 year, and then New Albany in the in 1994, and they had played a really tough schedule. They'd bolted up. They were in the Hall of Fame tournament that year. They played some of the top teams out of Chicago, but New Albany in that semi-state was just a buzzsaw, and they, you know, with Lamont Rowland and Chad Hunter and Angelo Pipes, some of those guys that were coming up behind Ladrell, it was just a wildly athletic team, and they really bothered Paoli that year. But it doesn't take anything away from the great run that Paoli had over those 3 years. A couple guys that didn't make it were Rusty Hensley and Jake Biddle. They went to the top 40 that year, and certainly Hensley especially could have been considered for this Silver Anniversary team. So it was just a really fun run, and for anybody that was around to watch that, I mean, they'll remember how special that season was.
Lee Nalion, a familiar name. We talked yesterday when mentioning the three local guys on the Silver Anniversary team. He went on to have a great pro career, but he was on the South Bend Clay team, which beat Ladrell in New Albany in the state semifinals when it was one class, and it was a real controversial call situation at the end of the game.
Yeah, Lee was just the one matchup problem for New Albany. You know, they had Gerald Smith was about a 6'5 center, and you had David Hunter was about 6'4 there at the power forward. But Nalion was, you know, 6'8, left-handed guy, big, strong character, and that was the one thing that New Albany really didn't have an answer for defensively there. So, you know, we matched up pretty well with them, and it was a tough couple of calls there right at the end. There was a blocking foul on David Hunter there in the final minute, and then the very controversial travel call against Ladrell on what could have been a four-point play that would have given New Albany lead there in the last 10 seconds of the ball game. So it's one of those what-ifs and tough situations that New Albany has run into every now and then on deep tournament runs.
Brian Sullivan is with us. A little history today on Indiana high school basketball, talking about the Silver Anniversary team, which is kind of what spurred our conversation today. Brian, we're headed into a big weekend of high school basketball. New Albany hosting Floyd Central on Friday. The Forum Tip-Off Classic is a good statewide showcase on Saturday, which will pit Trace Jackson Davis and Center Grove against Keon Brooks and La Lemire. That said, you've done a great job tracking the history of some of New Albany's big rivalry games. And, of course, Floyd and Jeffersonville, the two big ones on the schedule each and every year. And we didn't talk about this beforehand, so I don't know what you've got available to talk about or what interesting factoids you might be able to come up with. But it's a big series for both teams. It's one that means a lot, with both schools belonging to the same school corporation, which is something you don't always see. And it's one that maybe in recent years hasn't been as competitive as what it was back a number of years ago. But when the two teams hook up, oftentimes you can expect a competitive outcome.
You know, there's a significant difference this year, and I think New Albany's won 38 or 39 of the past 43 ball games and 21 out of the last 22. Of course, Floyd got one last year. You know, by and large, New Albany has always had the best player on the floor. You know, Floyd has had good players, but it might be NAI or Division II players, and New Albany's just had this steady stream of all-stars, like we've talked about, or Division I players. I think on paper, for the first time in a long while, the top individual player is in the green and gold. And a lot of the times, you know, if two teams are evenly matched, you kind of give the advantage to whoever's got, you know, that one go-to person that the other team can't stop. New Albany's done a pretty decent job defending Kobe in the past. I don't know what to expect. I think we talked about after the game the other night down in Evansville that there's a pretty good possibility we're going to see a lot of ugly, low-scoring, defensive-oriented games out of New Albany. That's certainly the way that Floyd's been able to win the past several years under Coach Sturgeon. So anybody that thinks this is going to be a game played up in the 70s probably hadn't been paying that much attention. I mean, it's one of those was 51-46 and 49-47 last year, and with no Romeo or Sean out there, where you might get a 30-point effort out of somebody. I think this is a game that's going to be played, you know, just a one-possession game either way, and probably in the mid-40s. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what the crowd's going to be like. It was crazy last year, and you know, they're two top 10 teams, so I hope that we get the same kind of intensity out there that we had in both contests last season.
Brian Sullivan joining us. Brian, thanks so much for the great information on some history, the silver anniversary guys locally, three that are very deserving to make that team, and, of course, a little New Albany Floyd Central history and preview as well. We covered a lot of ground. Fun chat. We'll do it again, and you know I'll see you Friday night.
All right. Thank you, Matthew.
All right, Brian Sullivan with us to wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report. That's going to be it for today. Back on Thursday with Alex Bozich and much more right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.